Okay. So it's a very good job that we were going to see my parents yesterday, because it forced me last weekend to look at my calendar and realise that I was speaking this morning, because I'd completely forgotten. So it's a good thought. So for those of you who are feeling very cold, which includes me, I'm not going to talk for very long. So let's give praise for that for a moment. So as I was thinking about what we were going to talk about, my mind went to we have a bit of a family ritual. I'm sure that many of you have your own equivalents, but every Saturday we do a kind of a family night, and we rotate whose turn it is to choose what we're going to do. And if it's Tristan, we know pretty much we're going to do a board game, because Tristan loves games. For most of the others, everyone's a bit lazy and just chooses to sit around watching a film. But anyway, last week's was Rebecca's choice, and she chose to watch Chariots of Fire. And I'm sure that most of us here will know the story of Chariots of Fire very well. It was the first time our kids had seen the film. But for those who are less familiar, it's the story of people from, I think, very different backgrounds leading up to the 1924 Olympics. Particularly two characters, Harold Abrahams and Eric Liddell, as the two kind of main characters in the film. Harold Abrahams coming from a very affluent Jewish background, Eric Liddell coming from a missionary family background, having been born in China and living in Scotland at that time. And I guess the centrepiece in many respects of the film is the fact that Eric Liddell kind of very famously refused to run the 100 metres because he was a Christian, and he didn't believe that it was the right thing to do on the Sabbath to kind of be running. Now, we can debate whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, but that was his red line as to what it was in his faith that that he considered unacceptable. And the film somewhat embellishes it beyond reality and makes it a big kind of standoff between him and even the future King of England gets involved, which I'm not quite sure is historically verifiable, but nevertheless, let's go with that. It also misses out the fact that he didn't only kind of reject that, he also rejected doing the 100 metres relay and the 400 metres relay, both of which he was selected for. So it's actually three events he was selected for that he declined to participate in. Instead, he chose to race the 400 metres. And again, the film embellishes it a little bit with it kind of being swapped out. Again, actually, it was plotted weeks, if not months in advance that he was going to be running the 400 metres. Anyway, of course, he goes on and wins the 400 metres gold. Even though his times leading up to it was way off the pace of the main people. But in the event, he gets a new world record, new Olympic record, and wins the 400 metres, as well as getting bronze in the 200 metres. His running style was something unique. It wasn't exactly conventional. If you remember the film, he always kind of is a bit all over the place. And there's this kind of very famous scene, which actually is true, of people saying, oh, he's not going yet because his head's not back. His style's always his head goes back. And he goes, he runs kind of very wild and free. And a bit I wanted to focus on was there's a bit which, again, they pick up on in the film, which is true, is that when he's asked about his running, he says this. He says, I believe God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. And it got me thinking, isn't it extraordinary, just the idea to think of the Lord taking pleasure in this wild, fast, free running Scot, and by extension kind of applying that to us logically, there must be things that we can do which the Lord takes pleasure in. And just an amazing thought, isn't it, the idea that the Lord takes pleasure in what we do. And again, perhaps I was thinking about this when I spoke a few weeks ago. I was kind of talking about how this message of the gospel would have been received, the original kind of hearers of it. And they were thinking of God as distant, far removed, set in stone, immovable. And now we've got a God who not only is concerned about us, but a God who takes pleasure in us and what we do. During lockdown, I've taken up running, and I go out typically three times a week. And I'm not sure that anyone who watches me run would take pleasure in watching me run, let alone the Lord. So for each of us, it's going to be different things that we do that the Lord would look at and take pleasure in. As I kind of was thinking about this, I googled the word pleasure in the Bible to look at kind of, you know, what does the Bible say about the things that the Lord takes pleasure in? And I have to say, most of the time, the word pleasure is a negative connotation in the Bible. And it's very much kind of warning us against the pleasures of the flesh and things like that. But there are a number of occasions which kind of talks about this idea of God taking pleasure in his people. So Psalm 149, it says, the Lord takes pleasure in his people. And of course, Philippians 2, it refers to it's God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. So there's that idea that the Lord is at work in us. Why? Because it pleases him to do so. So again, he not only takes pleasure in us, he is at work in us for his pleasure. And so I kind of, to think as a prompt as to what it is in each of our lives that it is that we look at and think about what it is that the Lord takes pleasure in, I kind of thought a bit more about Eric Liddell and think about what was it about him that pleased the Lord. And so just a few thoughts, very brief thoughts. And I think first one for me was he was a heart fully alive. When you see the film, he's a man of passion, and he's kind of very much kind of signed up for what he's doing. He's wild and free in his running. We sometimes think of being kind of godly as being a bit kind of tame, a bit kind of muted. But that there's that kind of branch of Christianity, the Celtic Christianity. They knew that God couldn't be tamed. He was a wild God. He was a free God. They saw the Holy Spirit as the wild goose. And I think there's something of the Lord taking delight in seeing that kind of sense of freedom and joy in us. And that sense with Eric Liddell, when he ran, he was fast and free. And they, I think I just got that sense of, you know, people who watched him were going, yes, there was a kind of a wildness about it. And I think there's something of God taking pleasure in that. Second thing for me was he was all in. Eric Liddell was fully committed. He trained hard. He gave his all. And we see that coming through in the film in two different ways. He's Harold Abrahams, who was kind of very scientific, very kind of, in a very early sense, very kind of thoughtful about his training. Eric Liddell was out there running on the hills and on the beaches, but was very dedicated to what he was doing. You know, there's a famous scene of, again, this is historically true, that in a race, he trips up early on gets back up again and wins the race. And you think, in a long distance race, you can kind of think, oh, you can see that happening. In a sprint, though, someone falling over and getting up and winning the race, it's kind of extraordinary. But he's that kind of fully all in, committed. So that's my second thing, being all in. Third thing with me was doing things well. I think the Lord takes pleasure when we do things well, as to the best of our ability. Yes, many of us have got natural talents. Eric Liddell had a natural talent for running, but he wanted to do the best that he could to glorify God. And I think there's something in us when we do the best that we can in whatever field of expertise that we have, that God takes pleasure in that. The Lord kind of responds to that as we try our hardest. It may not mean we're going to win. May not win an Olympic gold. It may not mean we're always kind of recognised as the very best. But I think the Lord sees our effort and takes pleasure in our desire to do well. And then next thing I thought of was the last thing actually, and I want to focus on, was his priorities were in place. So that quote from Eric Liddell, he recognised that God had a purpose for him. His purpose wasn't to run. His purpose was something quite different. That went beyond running. So even though it gave God pleasure to see him run, he knew that that wasn't his only purpose in life. And I think that too many people have kind of talents and passions but lack purpose. I always kind of look at those footballers that retire when they're like 32 years old or something. Like, their lives barely got started and they think it's over, because for them it was all about being a professional footballer or an elite athlete or whatever it's going to be. And what do they always do? Because not everyone becomes a commentator on Sky Sports. So I always kind of think, what happens to these people after they just earn a lot of money and they play golf for the rest of their life? I don't know. But for someone like Eric Liddell, that was just the start of his journey. and he had a much deeper purpose. Listen to what he said when he was interviewed when he came back from the Olympics in 1924. He said this. He said, "It's been a wonderful experience to compete in the Olympic Games and to bring home a gold medal. But since I've been a young lad, I've had my eyes on a different prize. You see, each one of us is in a greater race than the one I've run in Paris. And this race ends when God gives out the medals." And for him, that was great. But if he hadn't won the gold medal, it wouldn't have been the end of the world, because it was just one thing. He had a much bigger purpose in his life. It got me thinking a bit about 1 Corinthians 9, that great passage about running the race, pressing on to receive the prize. So what was it that his purpose was? Well, for him, the year after the Olympics, Eric Liddell went back to China as a missionary. As I say, he'd been born in China. He always felt called to go back to China. And he spent the rest of his life there, other than two short stints back in Scotland on leave. So he felt called to go back there to share the gospel. And ultimately, he died there in a Japanese internment camp during the war. He was my age. He was only 43 years old when he died. He died of cancer because he couldn't get any treatment whilst he was in internment camp. It was a bit of a shock to people. They didn't realise that he had been ill at the time. And I stumbled across a quote that had been given by someone who was there in the camp with him about just how he carried himself. And this quote was this. It said, "Often in an evening, I would see him bent over a chessboard or a model boat or directing some sort of dance, absorbed, weary and interested, pouring all of himself into this effort to capture the imaginations of these penned up youths. He was overflowing with good humour and love for life and with enthusiasm and charm. It is rare indeed that a person has the good fortune to meet a saint, but he came as close to it as anyone I've ever known." And so it just kind of got me thinking about our lives. I mean, clearly he was a person who knew how to give pleasure to the Lord. And so I just kind of wanted to pose that as a thought for us. How do we give pleasure to God? What are the passions that you throw yourself into wholeheartedly, being all in, that the Lord looks at and delights in seeing your creativity at work, your hard work, your effort? What are the purposes that he has placed on your life that you're walking in that are seeing his kingdom come? It's your passions, your purposes, and your giving pleasure to the Lord. And for each of us, it's going to be something different. If I'm honest, I'm not always sure I know the answer to that in my own life. But I think it's just kind of useful occasionally, and we're in a funny season at the moment. And maybe it's a good opportunity to kind of pose those questions to ourselves afresh. About, you know, what is it that sets our heart alive that we're kind of all in around? What is it that we're kind of seeing as our purpose? Maybe it's for this season, or maybe it's going longer than this season. And how can we use those things to please the Lord? That's my thoughts for today.